Art Buchwald, the famous humorist and writer, decided that he did not want to live undergoing dialysis several times a week, and therefore he'd allow himself to die. He checked himself into a hospice. The doctors told him that he had about three weeks he would no longer be alive. But apparently God had other plans, and his demise did not turn out as anticipated. Buchwald's kidneys inexplicably kicked back in, and he survived in the hospice for so long that he wrote a book about the experience. In that book, he writes, "I've been laying in the hospice for 2 months with nothing better to do when I decided to start my column up again. People saw the column reappear in the Washington Post and they began asking questions. If he's about to die, what's he writing a column for?" Now, we've all heard that question, I would guess, at least in this form. If you suddenly learned you were going to die tomorrow, what would you choose to do today? That question comes along with a well-known Talmudic statement, "Repent one day before your death." The question comes back, "But how do you know when you'll die?" And the answer, you don't. So repent each day in order that you may live the best life. Which raises the query, if in the light of death you would change what you're doing, what are you doing it for anyway? The Gates of Prayer observes in a meditation, "For all things which seem foolish in the light of death are really foolish in themselves." When people found out Buchwald was dying but not yet dead, and so available to speak about what he was going through, he was invited to talk show after talk show to discuss the experience. He wrote, "Chris Wallace interviewed me for the Fox News Sunday. Chris maintained that becoming a hospice patient was a good career move for me. I enjoyed the interviews because it gave me something to do besides watch Wheel of Fortune." Buchwald chose to die because he was bored with his life in the process of dying. He did not want to undergo meaningless existence and suffering until the end came against his will. And so he planned to just sit back and die. But God proposed a different script. And by accident, the very act of dying became a meaningful enterprise. Our goal ought to be to live purposefully until we die and not give up on life before life gives up on us. If an activity seems meaningless in the light of death, maybe we should question doing it even when all is going well in their lives. Steve Kiernan is a journalist who has turned to writing about the healthcare system at the end of life. He's discovered something that others have missed. He writes, "We used to die primarily of heart attacks, strokes, and accidents. Now we die mostly of cancer, Alzheimer's, and AIDS. That shift presents an opportunity for sublime end-of-life experiences. Last wishes fulfilled, pain managed, relationships repaired, spiritual calm attained, which almost everyone misses." Kiernan points out that with the old medical model, we just try to prolong life as long as possible without paying adequate attention to the quality of that life. With that model as his guide, Buchwald decided to give up on life even before his body was entirely ready, just because the doctors predicted that the end was near. They didn't prescribe it. They didn't cause it. They just told him they thought that's what would happen. And they were wrong. Kiernan demands that we figure out ways to enable people to enjoy life to the end and then to die with dignity once death becomes immediate. When Kiernan was in town right before Rosh Hashanah, he related an interesting story of a woman who was to become 80 years old, who discovered that she had a terminal condition. She decided to throw the biggest and best party she possibly could for all of her friends and family. When people wrote from far away saying they could not attend because they couldn't afford the ticket, she sent them tickets so they could. When she had the party, just enjoying every moment, someone said, "You must have done everything you wanted to do before you died." She replied, "No, actually, there's one more thing I wanted to do, but I couldn't." So some of her friends asked what it was, and it turns out she wanted to go skydiving. So her friends took up a collection, and she dove out of an airplane strapped with her back to the front of an instructor. When the instructor preparing her told her that she could get hurt on the dive, she said, "Are you afraid the dive will break my tumor?" Such humor comes from the perspective of a person who has accepted death as part of life, but intends to continue to live as long as life offers something. The lady died 3 weeks after skydiving. Psychoanalyst Irvin Yalom is perhaps the best known person in examining our fear of dying. Recently in a speech, he described working with a young woman psychologist who, after the death of a friend, became overwhelmed by the fear of her own mortality. She was nearly immobilized by the panic and sought out Yalom's help. In the course of the therapy, the woman talked about how she loved to paint and started many pictures, but never managed to finish them. She imagined herself as an artist, but somehow never quite got to it. As Yalom probed her thinking further, it turned out that she felt compelled to compete with her husband about who could make more income. And the rivalry to work left her little, if any, time for painting. She felt intensely that she was wasting her life, and that self-denial led to her fear of dying, that she would die without really having lived. Yalom concludes that fear of death may indicate our sense of an unfulfilled life. The sense of impending death may cause urgency for living. The dean of a prestigious college called Buchwalden asked if he could bring anything when he came to visit. Great to be famous when you're in a hospice. Everyone in the world comes to see you. Buchwalden responded by asking, get this, if the man could get two young girls into the freshman class at his university. It was admittedly an unusual request, but the man did it as Buchwalden's dying wish. Forgetting the ethics of that situation for just a moment, why would we not fulfill urgent wishes and grant requests all the time? Why not go out of our way to spend quality time always? Why do dying wishes have to be dying wishes? Why can't they be satisfied when someone is very much alive? Why not be more urgent about life itself? Psychologists say there are three primary fears of dying: worrying about the pain of dying, worrying about leaving behind the most significant people in our lives, and worrying about simply not being here, oblivion. Because we are anxious about death, most people I know try their hardest to never think about it. But the idea of death gives purpose to our lives. It gives consequence to living and helps us to prioritize what is fundamental. It helped Yalom's patient discover what was really vital to her. It helped Buchwald to live to the end. It helped Kiernan's 80-year-old bring her life to a culmination in a meaningful way. In the light of death, we can drop the pretense and live according to what we really think. Rather than living denying death, we should instead be living, acknowledging the brevity of life and allowing death to afford us perspective. All things that seem foolish in death are really foolish in themselves. Most of the people I speak with have never considered their mortality, or are too freaked out to talk about it. I know, because since I started studying about the impact of the thought of dying, I've watched people get upset at the very mention of the subject. Buchwald spoke about this humorously when he was in the hospice. He wrote, "I haven't made up my mind which of these groups, Christianity, Hinduism, Judaism, or Islam, has the answer to afterlife. But the nice thing about hospice is that you can talk about it openly. The truth is that we should live every moment with the consciousness that this might be our last day. If we were close to the end of our lives, regardless of our age, would we be content with the way we're spending our lives? I'm not asking if you want your life to end. Few people do. Perhaps there are those here who, in their grief, have given up on life, or continue to find it hard to move on and to make life a blessing. I am asking if you are living the life you believe God put you here to live. And if not, then why not? What's getting in your way? There's always more to do, another life to touch, a person to encourage or inspire, a kindness to be shown, knowledge to be acquired and shared, a prayer to be said, thanking God for the blessing of life. There's always nature to be appreciated, beauty to be contemplated, friendships to be made. I remember one person who lived in a tiny house. He was the most humble man I think I ever met. I don't think he made any more than $15,000 any year of his life. As far as I know, he never owned a car. But in retirement, every day, he would take two buses to get from Ward Parkway to the plaza, and then from the plaza to Baptist Hospital, where he would visit and comfort the sick. Life has meaning. Even if we are willing to invest meaning into life, to discover and act upon the reason God put us here in the first place. Life is best lived, valuing its brevity in order to truly value each day of existence. Perhaps my favorite folk singer, Phil Oakes, said it best. So let me finish with some of his lyrics. There's no place in this world where I belong when I'm gone. And I won't know the right from the wrong when I'm gone. And you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't feel the flowing of the time when I'm gone. All the pleasures of love will not be mine when I'm gone. My pen won't pour out a lyric line when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't be laughing at the lies when I'm gone. And I can't question how or when or why when I'm gone. Can't live proud enough to die when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here."